The title for this morning's sermon is from a poem called Manifesto, the Mad Farmer's Liberation Front. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not harvest. Say that leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. I pick that title because if predictions are correct, most of us will not be alive when the devastating effects of climate change are felt. Many of these effects are 30 or 40 or 85 years away. Let's look at the maps of the February issue of the National Geographic. Next to this map, they write, an altered South Florida. Our coast would be radically changed by 5 feet of sea level rise by 2100, as shown here, 85 years from now. This projection is on the high end of possible scenarios. Some predict only a 3 foot rise, some predict 6 feet. But the 5 foot rise is one under consideration now by multiple agencies planning for Florida's future. The light blue shows 85 years from now the land below the high tide line. This land would be under seawater during high tide. The Everglades, as you can see, are all underwater. Now, the next map is called a shrinking coastline. They write that if sea levels rise 5 feet near the coast, nearly 1 million of the current homes in Florida will be below the average day's high tide. Other structures at risk include 7 power plants, 26 hospitals, 213 schools, 32 sewage plants. In total, and this is in today's numbers, $390 billion worth of property could be damaged or lost, a sum 5 times as great as Florida's state budget. Well, I checked my GPS, and our church is 21 feet above sea level. So if the predictions are correct, this building will still be here and not be underwater in 85 years. However, the foundations of buildings in Lido Key and Siesta Key will be underwater during high tide. Now, here's a close-up of Sarasota at high tide in 85 years. You can take note of where you want to buy seafront property for your descendants. Our grandchildren will also need new and better air conditioning to survive the summers. This next slide is called extreme heat. They write that temperature swings will become more volatile by century's end. Residents of the southeastern United States currently endure about 8 days of temperatures at or above 95 degrees every year. But in 85 years, those who live here could face an additional 48 to 130 days of temperatures above 95 degrees each year. Now, if I live as long as my father, who died at the age of 83, I will not be alive when all this happens. Nevertheless, I feel a responsibility to my children, to my grandchildren. As the poet says, my main crop is the forest that I did not plant and that I will not live to harvest. And many of us feel this way. Feel that we have a responsibility to the future. The Reverend Brock Leach is an example. Brock has been working on a project called Commit to Respond. On the website, it says, "We are facing a climate crisis. Climate change is already causing suffering for peoples around the world every day. Recognizing the interdependence of all life, we are called as a people of faith and conscience to heal and sustain the planet we call home. Beginning with our involvement in the People's Climate March in New York last September and continuing with Climate Justice Month, March 22nd to April 22nd, we commit to joining together to shift to a low-carbon future, advance the human rights of affected communities, and grow the climate justice movement. The goal is to involve many Unitarian Universalist churches in participation in Climate Justice Month." Brock, tell us more about the idea behind Commit to Respond.
Thank you, Roger. Well, as you all know, Unitarian Universalists have been environmentalists ever since Thoreau and Walden Pond, maybe before. We recognize that the sacred is in the whole interdependent web of life, and we've always counted science as essential revelation. So we do not have too many climate change deniers among us. We may have some, and they're welcome to. But the bigger challenge for those of us who understand the threat of climate change is that we can feel pretty overwhelmed by it. It's huge, it's urgent, it's a complicated problem that demands all kinds of actions, from the individual to the global. It requires changing our own lifestyles at the same time we work to change the economic and political systems that we're part of. And of course, the impact is going to fall most heavily on those who are among the most economically and politically vulnerable. For us, this is an issue that threatens the two principles that we hold most dear: the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and our interdependence with one another and the rest of life. It's enough to make anybody feel sad and a little bit small. Last week, I attended the UU Ministers Association Education Institute in California, and I was lucky enough to be part of a three-day seminar led by Joanna Macy. Some of you have probably read her books in the past. She's an activist and a philosopher, and she's been working on climate change for at least 40 years. Joanna's message to us was that the key to moving from feeling overwhelmed to feeling empowered is what she calls active hope. She says that hope is something we do. We find it when we move ourselves into action and when we act in ways that create and strengthen the human relationships that nurture our spirits. That's what Commit to Respond is all about. Beginning with Climate Justice Month and continuing all the way through the UN Paris Climate Summit that'll be in December, we're encouraging one another, both as individuals or families and as congregations, to commit to at least one action to shift to a low-carbon future, and one action to advance the rights of affected communities, building or strengthening partnerships with those who are the most vulnerable, and at least one action to grow the climate justice movement. That's because the changes that we make individually are terrific and needed, but they're not enough. We also need to lend our moral voice to advocate for a whole series of policy changes. It doesn't matter what you choose to do. We all need to start from wherever we are and do what we can. It all matters. It doesn't have to be big. We just need to start together. We're asking people in congregations to commit to actions that can be completed over the next 2 years, and then we're going to report on what we've been able to do together at the General Assembly in 2017. When you get a chance, either later today or sometime this week, go to www.committorespond.org, click on the Join tab, and you'll see you can sign yourself up. And then sometime in early March, you'll get a message that will let you know it's time to commit. And you go to the site, and it will recognize who you are, and it will highlight some suggested actions, and it'll guide you in how you might do those. But it'll also invite you to create your own action and to share it. Then when you're ready, you're going to be asked to record your commitments, and you're going to see a rolling tally of the commitments that we are making together as Unitarian Universalists. Later, you're going to be able to go back in and actually record what you were able to do. So the goal of Commit to Respond is to encourage and nurture our active hope. And I got to tell you, our church is way ahead of the curve. Lee Hall, as you know, has organized a series of weekly climate workshops, and she and Susie Brooklocker have been hosting these to provide spiritual support for sustainable living. They're every Sunday at 10:20. They grew out of the library and are now over there in the West Wing. Ward Pilato organized two showings of Cowspiracy. I'm told one of them had 50 and the other 70 people. This is a documentary about how eating patterns are a big factor in climate change and health. And this coming Wednesday evening, Brian Hunter and Julie Leach and a whole team of volunteers have organized a public climate change symposium called Fire, Floods, and Famine. What can we do about climate change? We're going to get to hear from some leading experts about the impacts in Florida. As of last night, we had 220 people signed up to attend, and about half of them from outside of our church. There are 20 more spaces left for dinner, but if you want to just go to the symposium and provide your own dinner, you can also get a ticket to do that for just $15. So I invite you to stop by the table in the courtyard. In total, there are at least 50 folks in our congregation who are working on these activities. And a subset of us have been meeting as the Commit to Respond Task Force to think about the commitments that we might want to make together as a congregation. Our goal is to have some ideas that we can present to the congregation for their input at the annual meeting on March 29th. So far, we've had great suggestions. For example, to make the shift to a lower carbon future, there's a lot of interest in this congregation to shift and help ourselves establish more healthy eating patterns. We're also thinking about different ways to finance the installation of a photovoltaic solar system at the church. To advance the rights of affected communities, we've talked about partnering with Children First, which is the county Head Start provider, and with All Faiths Food Bank to support low-income families as they transition to healthy, sustainable eating. And to grow the climate justice movement, we'll be hosting the symposium, of course, but we're also looking at backing a campaign for a Florida constitutional amendment that would remove the legal barrier that currently prevents residences and businesses from generating and selling solar power. On a bigger scale, we've even wondered whether we as a church could initiate a public campaign to make Sarasota the greenest city on the Gulf Coast. There are a lot of ideas, and they would cover all the bases if we chose to do that. So there are a lot of possibilities, but what we do will ultimately depend on the collective interest of this congregation and who among us is willing to help lead the work. So if you'd like to be part of the conversation about actions, if you have one of these ideas that you'd really like to help put in place, please join us at the next Commit to Respond Task Force meeting. It'll be next Sunday at 9:30 in the library, and we would love to have all of you there.
So, Brock,
I made a commitment today. I walk to church. It's only a mile. I mean, don't get carried away. Katie's not. She lives in Tampa. But I could do it. I walked to church. I was able to look at the birds that I encountered. I smelled the trees. I could feel the cool breeze against my skin and the hard sidewalk against my feet. I heard the sounds of the morning as I walked. Some of my thoughts and feelings, of course, were not pure as I walked along. I looked at the cars that were rushing past me on Fruitville. And I thought to myself, some of these cars are works of art. in their engineering and in their design. So one of the feelings I had as I walked was envy for the people who own and ride in these beautiful automobiles. However, I only felt a little bit of envy. Mostly I felt happy that I am in good enough physical shape to walk a mile. As I grow old, I may gradually move to a cane and then to a walker and perhaps to a wheelchair. Later, I may not be able to see the trees and the birds the way I can now as my eyesight gets older. So I give thanks. I am grateful that right now, at least, I can still walk a mile. I do not take this skill for granted. My feeling of gratitude is much stronger than my feeling of envy. As I walked, I also had a small feeling of moral correctness. The Kentucky poet Wendell Berry wrote that the environment is a big problem. Global warming is a big problem. He said, "The overwhelming tendency of our time is to assume that a big problem calls for a big solution. But big solutions not only tend to prolong and complicate the problems that they are meant to solve, but big solutions can create new problems. On the other hand, if the solution is small, obvious, simple, and cheap, then it may quickly and permanently solve the immediate problem and many others as well. So if a city dweller walks or rides a bicycle to work, she has found a simple solution to her transportation problem. And at the same time, she's reducing pollution, reducing the waste of natural resources, reducing the public expenditure for traffic control, saving us all money, and improving her health. So by walking today, I reduced pollution a little bit and reduced the waste of natural resources and improved my health. In this way, I help preserve the forests that I will not live to harvest, so that those who come after me can also enjoy them." But it's not just the future I'm thinking about when I walk. I am renewing myself spiritually. Walking outside, I am more in touch with the inner core of my own being, more in touch with the place within me beyond words, the place that is my center. There I find connection to the whole of reality. I am in touch with myself, with others, and with nature. And I realize as I walk along that I am part of a wondrous whole.